Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you in part by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Wednesday, June 2nd. I am your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us for another edition of the show. MarketTalkAg.com. That is our home on the World Wide Web, MarketTalkAg.com. You can find us there. Our social media links, you can listen to all of our different streaming sources, find all of our radio affiliates and much more, all online at markettalkag.com. Well, we spent a week without our good friend Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics, but we couldn't keep him away any longer as he joins us for our Wednesday commentary. Mike, good afternoon, and it's great to have you back on the show after a much-deserved week away.
Just nice to be back with you, Jesse. As I told you before we went on air, I got one daughter married, the only daughter. I hope I never and won't ever have to do that again.
Well, that is the hope. That is for sure. And I'm sure that will be the case. That will definitely be the case. Mike, let's talk about these markets. And, you know, as we get into the month of June, overall, we normally don't trade a weather market, but it just seems like that's the talk of the town here the last couple of days is weather. And it's really just an interesting dynamic that we are trading a weather market here to begin the month of June, Mike.
Yeah, and a couple things. I think what I'm looking at very early on this month, Jesse, is maybe a very similar pattern in terms of trade sentiment and psychology as what we saw in May, where the first half of May, we came in trading weather and supply, and the trade really didn't look much at demand. They pushed it back onto the back burner because of the weather issues that we were dealing with. Second half of May, however, especially the last week and week and a half, the demand market came roaring back as a front burner top tier issue, mainly because China wanting to work down prices because of some policy shifts that they were putting in place, not only affecting copper, iron ore, but also ag commodities and specifically corn. I'm not so sure that we won't see kind of a similar type pattern where the trade is very uncomfortable, again, led by the spring wheat country. Fargo, North Dakota is going to get up to 101 degrees the next couple days. The rains the models forecasted last week did not appear to happen, and we've still got a very large swath of the United States crop belt, maybe not the primary corn belt, but the crop belt in a very dire situation very early on. And that's why I think June could be as much in the first half a weather market as much as May was. One other thing I would say, and as a side note, I'll say the European model is just not being nearly as generous about the Northern Plains getting rains the next 7 days as the GFS model is at this point in time. So we may be right back on the hunt for trying to break through $8 Minneapolis or spring wheat futures as we get into the end of this week or the beginning of next week, on the idea that crop conditions will fall even more, unexpectedly more, in spring wheat next Monday. I think the other thing that came into play here that it probably is going to come into play in the month of June is the WASDE report. And I got to tell you, Jesse, I think we're just beginning on what China may try to do to work these prices lower. They're working very hard, changing physically and literally changing their government policy on their currencies. They've widened their currency band to weaken it against the U.S. dollar because it just made a three-year high against the U.S. dollar. And then just in the overnight markets, they've changed some of their lending facilities so that it would try and weaken the currency, the Chinese yuan, by speculators not wanting to buy it as aggressively as they've been buying. So don't expect, if one thing you take away from today's interview, in my opinion, is don't expect China to walk away and stop trying to break these markets down. And let's be real honest with one another here in these kind of markets. Look, I've never heard anybody say when they got back from the grocery store, well, my steak was just too low a priced. I'm really ticked off. Look, governments want cheap food policies because consumers demand it, and we have to really remember that. So 3 months ago, we talked about sell and defend. We talked about selling on the way up. I'm in no different situation, thinking that the first half of this month will be the weather supply side. Second half, if the weather goes away and the WASDE report doesn't give us any kind of fuel, then we come swinging back around to the demand side.
Well, Mike, breaking down a little bit here on the corn side, first, that WASDE report you mentioned, a lot of folks have their eye on that Brazil corn number, USDA, wondering if they're going to drop it. I know some different private firms have really sharply cut their estimates here. I think StoneX was the one that came out earlier today or this week with their drop in estimate. And looking at that Brazil situation, what are your thoughts? USDA doesn't typically make a lot of changes in the June report. I think a lot of folks are waiting for maybe a surprise there, or possibly seeing USDA not change their estimate as much as needed, and maybe that would be the surprise. What are your thoughts on this Brazil crop and how that's going to play in to the June numbers?
Yeah, real good point here, and I think we've got a world stocks to use ratio to maybe throw up as we talk about this, Jesse, because Brazil is going to be the leading candidate to bring the stocks to use level down from the current 25%, and where that red star is where I think we're heading towards if we have any weather issues at all. We're a long way away from a 179.5 yield in the United States corn right now. I think a long way away, and I don't think we're much higher than last year's 172, maybe a bushel, maybe two bushels, but everybody's talking about acres right now going up, and that's fine, but we also have to put down the most important element, and that is the yield number. And so I think the path of least resistance over the next couple, 3 months, especially if your area of Nashville and then on up into Kentucky and Indiana and southern Michigan continues to develop into abnormally dry weather, we're going to have a real difficult situation getting above a 175 national corn yield. But my suspicion is that my private estimate for the Brazilian crop is between 95.7 and 97.7. This is very similar to where we were back in 2016 with 98.5 million tons. So that's kind of where I'm going into this this next WASDE report. I think it's important to remember, typically CONAB will come in a couple days or a day before the USDA comes in. And the USDA has been very, very loyal to CONAB by giving just spewing back or changing their number to match up exactly with CONAB's figure. So the key with this chart is, you notice we have not been below 20% stocks to use in world corn ending stocks. And this does include China in there, and that's a big question mark for me. And that's probably why we're closer to 20% than 25%, because I just don't think China's production numbers are accurate at this point because of their import pace that they've been hitting us with in everything. And so I think you get below 20%, then you can start talking about very, very high, historically high corn prices. That's what I think we want to rely upon in that sell and defend model. Sell it for profit, defend it for the idea that if we go below 20% stocks to use ratios, you've got something on the books that will take you higher and allow you to improve your selling price.
Well, you know, we also look at corn acreage, and I know June 30 is going to be another report we're watching that'll be coming up, and that's one that usually has some big numbers there that can move the market one way or another. And we talk about picking up fringe corn acres possibly in the Dakotas, some of those places that are dry. But you know, I was talking to some farmers up in North Dakota here today, and I mean, the western two-thirds of that state and really that northwest corn belt, they're in a lot of trouble, and it'd be hard to imagine that we pick up many corn acres there due to how dry it is. And we're also seeing that dryness move eastward as well. And I know some folks, northwest Iowa, southwest Minnesota, a really rich corn belt area, they're a little worried as well. So I think that's another thing we have to keep our eye on. It seems like these weather forecasts keep us guessing by the day, by the week right now, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad you brought that up, because this is what's going to be tricky. And that's where the first half of the month, the second half of the month, we really want to be very smart about this, because you're right, that acreage report at the end of the month is a supply feature. It's not a demand feature. So that'd be a caveat to what I just got done talking about. But it still holds that if we rally into the first half of the month, going into that WASDE report, we really want to make hay while the sun's shining and get our hedges in place. And I would do it very, very aggressively in the puts, less so in the cash sales, because we just don't know the yield. I heard today, first day really back in the seat, being able to make calls out to clients since the wedding and since the holiday. Clients yanked in South Dakota on up into North Dakota, east into Indiana and western Ohio, talking about freeze frost damage in both corn and beans. So you're exactly right. Not only do we have issues with the dry weather, we also have freeze frost damage. Now, USDA can play that one of three ways. Do they cut the planted acreage? Probably not. I think the planted acreage is going up in corn, but so that leaves harvested acres or national yield. And I'm guessing that what they'll do is take a national yield hit somewhere down the line. But that's, again, where we want to be ahead of the curve and have that planned out. So that sell and defend model seems to work very, very well with what you and I are talking about, because we're not talking about really short-term issues. We're really talking about issues that are going to come back around in 3 to 4 months. And I think one thing that every morning I wake up, I say to myself, and this goes back to the meat prices, this goes back to the food prices, and you're seeing it more on the national news. Almost every day I'm seeing a piece of news and a special report being done on high food prices. Jesse, in 6 months from now, just ask yourself a question. If we're at these price levels and we don't have any better a supply chain than we have right now, is demand going to be higher or lower? And I think it's pretty easy to say it's going to be lower. So that's why you sell rallies.
Mike, let's switch our conversation over to livestock. I think let's start with the hog market first. This hog market is wild. We're trading all-time highs. And I know the pork cutout values and that cattle hog spread are a couple things you wanted to touch on. So why don't you give us your thoughts on the hog market, and I'll pull up these charts here as you call them out too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have taken the hogs above the cattle. We've talked about this. I was expecting the May hogs, after they went off the board, to cool this market back. They did for 2 days or 3 days. It really didn't do it. And so I am reevaluating all the analysis at this point when it comes to the hog side of the equation. And what you're looking at here now, Jesse, is by going negative for a second time. We went negative in the 1st of May, went negative last week as we closed out the month of May. We're now looking at a situation where we don't have any support in the cattle minus the hogs for lead month futures, which right now would still be June against June. And so it really opens up the door that we could go down to the 1997 monthly lows, where we closed out the lows in 1997. And that's right around that $20.22, I think, was the close on a monthly basis back in 1997 towards the later part of the year. And this goes back to, we are at a stage now, I don't buy into the idea because of this spread and what the hog prices are doing. And we got to think about it this way. What's leading the hogs up? It's the pork side of the equation. It's the cutout side of the equation. And so, and here's a perfect example of it. We got three charts here. We've got belly cutouts, pork cutouts, and ham cutouts. These markets, especially the pork cutout, it's up at a 4+ year high at this stage. And the belly cutout looks like it's bottomed at this point. It's back to 186. And if you look at this chart from 2013 to current, there's only 2 years out of the last six, 2 years out of the last eight that the annual high didn't come in July or August. So we're really setting this market up for a real push to the upside in the summertime as the summer grilling season starts to really kick into high gear. And you're going to see probably hogs stay very strong because there's a limited supply of beef. That's the biggest secret to why the hogs haven't broken since the May contract went off the board, if you ask me. So what I say to cattlemen and hog producers and ranchers is, so much for the transitory food inflation. I don't think we're going to see food inflation and prices back down at all this coming summer. The recent data from the National Restaurant Association put April grocery store increase prices up only 1.2%, but restaurant menu prices jumped 3.8% in April, and that was led by wholesale prices for food up about almost 7%, and that's only going to go higher, I think, at this stage of the game. So we can enjoy these times now, but at some point we're really going to have to be concerned about a big drop in prices, and I suspect it's going to be before or right after July 4th now, seasonally speaking, because USDA has beef production on a quarter basis peaking out on the third quarter. I agree with that. And they have pork production peaking out on the fourth quarter. And so I think as we ramp up more pork production and market ready hogs, that July 4th time period is probably the place to get those back end hedges in place.
Well, and on the flip side of that, this cattle market, you know, it's had some negative news after negative news, the JBS cyber attack hitting that market here over the holiday weekend. We come in Wednesday, we traded triple digits higher in cattle, but it almost seemed like in this futures market, maybe that was a psychological bounce. I know we're still kind of figuring out the effects of this JBS cyber attack, although most of those plans sounded like they were back online today. But what are your thoughts on the JBS situation and how that's parlayed itself into the cattle markets here this week?
I agree with you. I don't think the cattle market looks that healthy yet, but by the same token, I think the export pace is not going to back down for the beef side of the equation. I think the world needs the U.S. beef market. I think Argentina is running tight on beef. I think Brazil is running tighter than normal on beef. And I think Mexico has got a very large demand base built up now for the meats at this stage. So I think our export market remains very, very firm. We just need to get up about $4 to $6 higher in the June and now probably the August contract of the fat cattle market to where we can make some money. But cattle producers are going to have to be very, very good at hedging in this next three-month window, I think, because they're going to be on the front lines of markets trying to pressure prices lower. And I would expect that these breaks to the downside from black swan events like we just saw will increase, not decrease, because, again, food prices are very, very nerve-wracking to consumers. And you look at what happened in the Malaysian palm oil markets in the overnight, we were up 5%. That immediately bled into the soybean oil futures, and it closed up 5%. The mercantile exchange, the futures board of trade prices, they are not messing around anymore. They're going ahead and pushing in those inflationary prices. That's good if you're a speculator, but if you're a rancher who needs to buy feed, especially cattle ranchers, they're just not getting a break. Whereas the meal market, at least, is helping the pork side and the hog producer. In fact, the hog meal ratio, I think, is running at about a 6 or 8 month high right now. Hogs premium to the meal when you divide the two together. But cattle producers and ranchers really need to be on the ball. I've locked in half of my feed needs for the next 6 months in the December contract. I plan to do the second half before we get to July 4th.
Well, I think another one, a final note as well with cattle. I know the packer margin issue, that's still a hot topic that's affecting things. And then you look at the screaming cutout value, just screaming higher beef cutouts. And I know that a lot of cattle ranchers are looking at those factors and they're still kind of shaking their heads as to why they're not getting better cash and better futures numbers right now.
And it could be a lot worse if the dollar started to go higher and we brought in that select type of meat or those cuts that we typically import. And that's a really big feature. What would open the downside up in the cattle market until we peak on that production number in the third quarter? And it would be the dollar going up. And all of a sudden we see a bunch of imports come in, maybe not as much as we expect, but the ripple effect or the psychological impact on the funds, I think, would be substantial. So it is going to be, I think the cattle market is going to be the toughest to deal with in the next 3 months, so that you can get a, and what I'm getting at here, Jesse, is just get puts bought. You know, they're going to be cheaper because you're going to be doing nearby puts, because I won't hedge after August unless I see something different. But just get puts bought and get a floor underneath you in the futures market and let the cash market come to you then.
Well, Mike, you mentioned the dollar in there. I think we should look at some outside macro factors. Anything there you want to touch on here today before we run out of time?
Yeah, the biggest factor is what's going on in China. I mean, they're on a mission to try and bring their currency down because they're not happy with their export pace. They're really happy with their import buying power, but they need to export more because their economy, I feel confident enough to tell you, Jesse, I think their economy is stalling out at this point domestically, and that's why they're putting the pressure on the speculation, and they're telling banks don't allow speculation in commodities anymore. Don't let them trade on the dollar and exchange individual investors. And they're really clamping down in a big, big way in a variety of ways. And so that's going to impact the dollar. I would also say that I would not be surprised to see in the next 30, 60 days, a real big jump in interest rates, because if this inflation is not transitory and the Fed sees that it's not transitory, the real market, the capital market's going to say, maybe we should get ahead of the Fed here and start taking the real interest rates up again, and the bond prices take those down and push those yields higher. I think that's right around the corner, because this idea of a transitory inflation seems to me to be a little bit of a long shot at this stage, given what we're seeing on these numbers.
Well, Mike, always a great insight. And I know folks can reach out to you through your website, get a free trial for the newsletter, and a lot of different ways to contact you and work with you, isn't it?
Yeah, and you'll get audio updates on the midday. You'll get video updates periodically throughout the week. There's a lot of different formats I send out. I'll send out a lot of stories that I think are pertinent to your farm and ranch. So go to globalcomresearch.com, globalcom with two M's, research.com, and sign up for a trial, and I'll talk to you once at the end of the trial and see what you thought.
Mike, appreciate the time as always. Glad to have you back on the show, and we will talk to you next week, sir. Thank you.
Great to be back with you, my friend. You too.
Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Find him online, globalcomresearch.com. This has been the Wednesday, June 2nd edition of Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great afternoon.